Heading to CBC? Make sure to stop by booth 1989 to chat with the Brewbound team, check out our live podcast recordings, and find out about Brewbound's upcoming events. Have news to submit ahead of the show? Head to brewbound.com/submitnews to let us know about your latest updates.
Hey everyone, this is Justin Kendall, the editor of Brewbound. Normally I'd be joined by my colleagues Jess Infante and Jeff Kleinman, but nothing is normal about what we're all living through right now. The coronavirus pandemic has forced us to stay at home, and Jess and Jeff are busy providing coverage of how the beer industry, as well as CPG, are adapting. So for the foreseeable future, we're going to shift our focus on the podcast. In the coming weeks and months, we'll be recording video interviews with folks on the front lines. We'll tell their stories, how craft brewers are meeting the challenges in front of them, what their needs are at the local and federal level, and much more. Those videos will appear on brewbound.com, and we're also planning to share the audio on this podcast. But first, we're going to give you one more deep dive into an entrepreneurial and growth story with a young craft brewer on the rise. Vitamin C Brewing Company in Weymouth, Massachusetts, is fast becoming one of the most popular breweries in a hyper-competitive state, which includes Trillium, Treehouse, Wormtown, Jack's Abbey, Night Shift, Harpoon, and too many breweries to name. I caught up with Vitamin C co-founder Dino Funari about a month ago, before the coronavirus disease COVID-19 became a global pandemic. Dino shares how, even after finding fast success, life isn't easy. Splitting time between the brewery and his day job, maintaining quality of life, which is even more important now that baby number three has arrived, and much more. It would be hard to call the last couple of weeks anything close to business as usual for anyone in the beer industry. Around March 23rd, Funari and I exchanged messages, and to quote him, "They're trying to make the best of a bad situation. Vitamin C is selling its beer to go, which has helped them avoid cutting staff. And that's something that Dino called one of our biggest fears. Hopefully, we can continue to maintain this until everything gets sorted out," he told me. We hope so too. So here's Dino Funari. This is Justin Kendall for the Brewbound Podcast, and I'm in Weymouth, Massachusetts with Vitamin C Brewing Company co-founder Dino Funari. Dino, before we got started here, we were talking about this blue cooler that's sitting in your tap room up on the wall high above so no one can swipe it. That cooler has a lot of lore behind it in the beer community here. Can you tell me a little bit about that before we get started?
Yeah, Justin, that's actually a good point. It's probably the most famous blue cooler in the craft beer industry. So that actually started probably about 5 years ago. We were still homebrewing out of my house in my basement, and we'd have all this beer to give out with nowhere really to put it. So we started reaching out to friends and told them that we'd leave them a four-pack, because we were packaging the beer back then in cans, that we'd leave a four-pack in the cooler, and they could come by and pick it up, and then they would tell their friends, and same thing would happen. And then it just kept compounding out. And next thing you know, it was friends of friends and friends of friends. And I'm getting messages from up and down the East Coast of people that wanted to come through and try the beer. So we would leave it in the cooler, and they'd say, "Oh, well, you know, we'll leave you a four pack." And it became this whole, like...
Did you get good beer?
Yeah, it was pretty good, actually. We were getting a lot of good stuff, probably a lot better than what we were giving out.
You think so?
Yeah, I would say. You know, this is all established breweries that had plenty more experience than we did. And our beer was probably glorified homebrew at the time. But it certainly got the word out, which was cool. We were able to get into the hands of a lot of people, and they seemed to enjoy it.
That's quite a way to start out. You know, give a four-pack, get a four-pack back, get some advice along the way. Were you getting any feedback?
We used to tell people, like, don't tell us the good stuff, just tell us the bad stuff. Because really, I mean, we can't improve it unless we know that there's something that needs to be improved. And we certainly don't want to make the same crappy beer over and over and over again. If there is some kind of a deficiency with it, you know, tell us, like, this is the off flavor that I got, or, you know, I opened it up and it was flat, or, you know, the color had changed, or whatever it was. I mean, those are things that we can work with. Those are things that we could correct and improve on, which to this day, it's still the same.
Well, clearly, the beer has improved quite a bit because you all are getting quite a few accolades. Your parking lot is filling up every weekend. I think some of those cars are being towed.
Probably too many, but yeah, that's happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you're getting a lot of demand. There's a certain level of hype behind you all. How are you managing that?
Well, that's a good question. Now that you've put me on the spot with that, and I'm starting to think about it, it makes me a little nervous. But, you know, I don't know. We've tried to stay humble throughout this whole thing. To us, we're still just doing the same thing that we were doing before. We're still homebrewing, even though we're not. It's just instead of being in a small basement, we feel like we're in a much larger basement. And instead of 20 to 30 to 50 people coming by to try our beer, you know, now there's 1,000 or 1,500 coming by. It's still people, right? It's still the same general concept, only they're actually paying us for it now, which is kind of cool, too.
it's really cool,
yeah,
actually.
And although the beer is probably not much better, it certainly, we feel, is getting better. And
what do you say that? Why do you say you don't think it's much better?
I don't know. I'm probably my own harshest critic, but I feel like we can always do better. And, you know, I always jokingly say with everybody here, like, I don't think there's a batch of beer that I've made yet that I love. So people seem to like it, and that's a good thing, but we always want to improve. And we look at it, you know, we'll try a beer that we've just canned, and it's like there'll be four or five things that I say, oh, I wish we did this, or I wish we did that. And it gives us something to look forward to the next time we put it out.
Well, I think that's a pretty great mindset, too, because it doesn't fall into a complacency. It's always, you know, wanting to top yourself or one up or improve.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, this is it's by no means a static industry. And whether it's styles or the flavors, I mean, it's always changing. It's always in flux. And although we have our base recipes, I mean, like I said, we always want to improve them. We always want them to be better. And I think when you do get complacent, that's when you get stale and you kind of get forgotten.
You're a year into this. I think you just celebrated your first anniversary, had a party here in the tap room where we're sitting.
Yeah, sorry for the mess.
it's not that bad, to be honest with you. I have seen far worse.
Okay.
But you're a year in. When did you decide you wanted to take this from homebrew to doing what you're doing now?
So it's funny you say a year, because now that you say that, boy, it feels like dog years. It really does. Because even though we weren't officially open, we were still trying to handle the way we were brewing beer, everything as though we were an open operating brewery, you know, quality control and packaging and branding and all that. I would say probably about 5 years ago, kind of made the decision and said, you know, maybe we're onto something. Maybe this could be an avenue for us, and maybe we could turn this hobby into something bigger and you know, get our beer out to more people. And then that opened up a whole other, you know, host of challenges and problems and things that we knew nothing about.
Well, and that's something I really want to dive into is, on the surface, you know, from an outsider, everything sounds like, oh, man, everything's going awesome. And that's always, you know, the view a lot of people take is, oh, man, look at them. They're doing super great. And you are doing great. You're pulling people in here. You know, they're enjoying the beer. But there's also a side of this that people don't really get to see, and there are a lot of challenges. I'd like you to share some of those challenges that you all have experienced.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you mean that you just open a brewery and that you're not just busy every day and you're not selling out? I mean,
you're immediately rich, right?
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah, right now we are, right? We just, you know, we're throwing money out left and right. It couldn't be further from the truth, really. I mean, everything from as something as simple, which it's not simple at all, but writing a business plan. It's like being back in school and having to write your thesis or something. It's how do you put to words, if you're not someone that's good at that, how do you put to words on paper to try and sell a concept to someone that really doesn't have the same, I guess, passion for your hobby that you do? You know, it's your baby. Like, it's something that you've put everything into, and that's all you are consumed with. And how do you get that message across to someone and have them say, as you know, whether it's a bank or an investor, like, yeah, I believe in you, and I think that this there's something there, and here you go, I'm going to loan you the money you need to open a business, because guess what, we didn't have any money. It wasn't like we were able to just pick and choose where we wanted to go and how big of a system we wanted, and it was a lot of sacrifice and selling, you know, to get that point across to people to believe in us.
Mm-hmm.
Malt Europe Malting Company is North American proud with premium grains from field to flavor. Our selections include base, specialty, and distillers malt varieties. Stop by our booth, 2143, at the Craft Brewers Conference in Vegas. Does your brewing software suck? We've heard it from thousands of brewers. Connect with Ollie today, and we'll buy out your current contract and hook you up with brewing software that doesn't suck. Visit booth 1685 at CBC or hit getollie.com/pod.
You mentioned to me that you've gotten some advice along the way. One of the people who helped you along with your business plan was Peter Bissell from Bissell Brothers.
Right, right. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to meet Pete and the rest of the gang up there back prior to their opening, and formed a friendship. He really kind of helped me out. I'll never forget, and he'll probably kill me for saying this, but he had sent me this long email one time, just more or less laying it out on the line, like, you know, you're at a point where you're going to go two ways with this thing. You can, and I'm paraphrasing, but you can go this one way where you're going to dig deep and this is going to become your whole life, and you're going to do what you have to do to open a brewery, and it's going to suck and it's going to require everything. Or you could still stay, you know, as a craft beer fan and continue to immerse yourself in the industry and become friends with different breweries and support them and still have a good time. But you need to decide what you want to do. And that was kind of my epiphany moment. And I'll forget, I got it. I got the message. And I showed my wife. And she just said, you know what? He gets it. He understands. You know, he's been there. And that's really kind of what pushed me over the edge. So I do blame Peter for that, for good and bad. So, and I constantly remind him of that.
That sounds like a red pill, blue pill moment. Not to like steal the whole Matrix thing, but
yeah.
You've got one path you can go down or you got the other. And you've clearly chosen, I don't know which pill it would be. I can't even remember the movie.
I can't either, but.
Let's just say you chose the red pill.
Right, so, sure. Yeah.
With that said, what is the vision for Vitamin C?
Boy, that's a good question. Even just in the short amount of time that since we've started this thing or even thought it up, the industry's changed, right? You know, what's a good number? I mean, everybody always says, well, how many barrels a year do you want to do? And, I don't know what that number is. You know, is it 5,000 barrels a year? Is it 10,000 barrels a year? Is it 30,000 barrels a year? You know, and you talk to some people and they'll say, well, if you're going to do over 10, you might as well do 30. I do know that being an older guy in this industry at the ripe old age of 48, I know that quality of life is very important to me. And coming from the corporate side, if I can create a legacy for my family and make this to a point where myself, my partners, and the people that work for us can still have quality of life and enjoy their families, I think that's more important to us than making millions. I mean, I live on a small house on a postage stamp, and I'm good with that. I don't need a giant home. I don't. The things that are important to me now are much simpler, I guess, in life.
Yeah. Well, and that's something else I wanted to touch on is you're in a position that I think a lot of our listeners can relate to is you still have a day job.
Oh, yeah. And it's going well. I mean, it's business is good in my regular life, my real job, quote unquote. So I and thankfully, because that's what's paying the bills. We made a commitment to ourselves that when we started this business, any revenue that we generated would be put right back into the business. You know, we've already added additional tanks since we've opened, which will allow us to, at this point, double our capacity in year two, which, you know, I don't know, again, going back to, I don't know what the right number is, but I think based on what we've seen, I think we'll be okay. The people are still lining up and they're still enjoying the product. And we really feel like we haven't even scratched the surface on the people that can get our beer at this point.
when you have that day job and it is going well and it is paying the bills, how do you balance that? And how do you view that, you know, in future terms of, do you want to maintain that position and do this, or do you want to eventually quit the job and make this full time? Like, what is sort of the dream there?
So it's kind of a three-headed monster, right? And that third head, which I haven't really touched on yet, is my family, right? I've got two little ones at home, and probably in the next, I don't know, 24 hours to 2 weeks, I'll have number three coming. So I'm very fortunate. My wife understands my passion project. She understands that how important this is and how, you know, again, creating a legacy is so important, and, you know, we'll all benefit from it, if you will. So it's tough because it means that there's a lot of time away from home. You know, I'm here just about every day in one capacity or another. So she's left wrangling the kids, and it's a challenge, especially, you know, at 9 months pregnant. You know, we hope that the travel will subside at some point and that we're able to get to a point where we're, you know, there's such a thing as a day off or even a vacation, which, you know, I don't even know what that's like anymore. But that'll have to come in due time. I mean, you know, through hard work, I think we'll get there.
And is that something that your co-founders are going through as well?
Sure. Yeah, this is, listen, none of us had any misconceptions that this was going to be easy. And I think that you see a lot of people that get into the brewing industry, the craft beer industry, that, you know, money people, I'll call them, where it's like, I have a bunch of money and I'm going through a midlife crisis, so I'm going to go buy a brewery, you know, and it's like, I'm going to just have somebody else run it for you. I mean, there's no heart in that. I mean, we believe in what we do. Like, this is, like I said before, it's our baby, and we want to be involved. We want to touch every aspect of it. We want to make sure that we're putting out the best product that we can, because we know that it will pay dividends down the road.
So in these early stages, I'm guessing striking that work-life balance has been one of the biggest challenges that you may not have expected?
Listen, we're not afraid of work, and we're not afraid of the hours. And we jokingly say, like, you know, a few of us will be sitting there hanging around talking about whatever, and it's like, oh, we got an empty tank. You want to brew a beer? And it's like 10 o'clock at night, you know? So we do jokingly say that. And one of these days, I'm sure one of us will push the other one to actually brew that beer at 10 o'clock at night. But we knew it wouldn't be easy, but it is what it is, right? It's the path we've chosen.
Do you get a lot of sleep?
No. If I'm lucky, I get between 3 to 4 hours a night. And that's, you know, unfortunately, I also handle a lot of the social media stuff. So that's like the time I can do it is when I'm not here and, you know, my wife's falling asleep and my kids are falling asleep.
Well, and
it's a grind.
You're on baby watch too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that adds to sort of the, I guess, stress and sleepless nights.
Yeah, it really does. Right now, obviously, my wife, she's not in the most comfortable state. So soon it'll be all worth it, though, once we meet the new addition. But it's tough. And, you know, I'd like to say I could try and help her out as much as I can. But she understands also, too, that there is so much going on at the brewery and, you know, I need to be in both places, really.
Yeah. When you look back on prior to opening this up, mm-hmm. and doing this build out, I mean, you've got two buildings, you've got this, I mean, this place is gorgeous.
This is a
nice space. How did your expectations differ from what reality was?
I think I remember that morning we were going to open saying, you know, if 100 people show up today, like that means that we did it, you know, like we made it. And next thing you know, there's, you know, I think we got like 12 or 1300 people that day. The line was out the door and didn't finally make it inside until 6:30 at night. And people had lined up at like 7 o'clock in the morning and we ran out of beer and it was a nightmare, but it was the most incredible nightmare ever. And that was pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm pretty fluid. I try not to pigeonhole myself into a situation where I say, okay, well, this is my expectation. This is what it's going to be. I try to just kind of let it go with the flow and see where things end up.
When that happens, you know, when you open the doors and, you know, it's not just 100 people, you know, it's 1,000 people or, you know, 1,500 people.
Right.
And that doesn't slow down. And, you know, I think you started off and you were open one night a week.
Yeah, we did for like the first 11 months, I think it was, we were open Saturdays only, 12 to 8. And that's pretty much all we could do because we kept running out of beer. And then we added an additional tank. And then we ramped up a little bit, and that kind of allowed us. We said, all right, we got to kind of draw a line in the sand here. And we picked Black Friday as the first Friday to open. And we did that, and that went well. And then we said, all right, well, maybe we can open Thursdays too. You know, we figured it wouldn't be, you know, we kind of made the decision that we would only release cans on Saturdays just because of the traffic in the park and not wanting to really disrupt things too much with the other businesses here. We're trying to be a good neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. So we figured that the Thursdays, Fridays would be more of the local crowd, which it has been. And it's nice because there are a lot of people that drive by on a Saturday that are, they get scared off. They say, well, I'm not going to go, you know, stand in a line. I mean, because that line culture, what's that, right? They're not the beer people, if you will. They're just somebody that wants to come in and have a beer and try it out. And, you know, it's the new thing, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives them a chance to come in and relax and talk. And you know, see people in here working on their laptops. It's a pretty cool vibe. It's kind of like what we had hoped it would be. Which I guess goes back to the vision of what we thought the space would look like. And I remember not even seeing the inside of the building, but driving up and seeing the two roll-up doors saying, oh, yeah, this is the spot. I could visualize those doors being open in the warmer weather and bringing the outside in. And it just, it really, there's some photos of it that we've taken that really capture it on a Saturday night at like 6 o'clock in the summer or 7 o'clock. And it's like the sun's going down and it's just a nice breeze, and it's like, oh, yeah, I don't want this to end.
That was the picture in your head, yeah, probably.
Yeah, yep, totally, totally. Yeah. Although I wish these doors were glass, but we're working on that.
The next investment.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
When that's happening, and you're living this, you know, in real time, you said you go from, like, the best nightmare ever on opening day, and then 11 months of only Saturdays and running out of beer all the time, to making those investments and, you know, being able to open on a Friday and then on Thursdays. As you're living through that, how are you sort of, you know, keeping up with that and keeping the passion burning?
You know what it is? Like, I don't want to say you don't have time to think about that because it's so crazy, but it's been like that movie 50 First Dates. Like every Saturday, it's the same. It's a repeat of opening day for us. Like, it's just madness, right? There's so many people showing up, and there's a line every Saturday before we open, and we go through the same process.
It's Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, Groundhog's Day. Exactly, exactly. I don't know. We just try to, you know, take one day at a time with it, and we've tried to make different enhancements, you know, from week to week without making a wholesale change, right? We don't want to change who we are. We don't want to change the culture here. We don't want to change the vibe. You know, we don't want to become a place where you have to go get a ticket to get in and get your beer or things like that. I mean, we're, you know, it's just not who we are, right? And it might work for other people, and that's great. They found a way to make it happen. With us, you know, people have become accustomed to what the situation is, and we try to guide them along as much as we can. You know, we've added POS stations, and we've tried to speed things up, and it seems like it's gotten better as we've grown, and we seem to have become more efficient. By no means are we perfect, and we know that. So just like we talk about always wanting to improve the product, we always want to improve, you know, ourselves and our processes here.
And that's something else I was going to ask about is how do you sort of keep those people engaged and keep the experience for them, you know, fun and, you know, wanting to come back even when there is sort of a line or something like that?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we have our regulars, if you will, and that number has grown. And there's people, there's a whole group of people that will show up here on a Saturday morning, and the next thing you know, they're like tailgating outside and people, so many people have met in line and they've become friends and we know them by name and they know everybody here by name. I mean, we have a family vibe here. Everybody that works here, I mean, it makes me proudest, I guess, when people will come up to me and say, boy, they'll leave a review, you know, online or whatever, saying that, you know, they are some of the nicest people that you'll ever meet, and, you know, in a brewery. And that makes me feel good. It means that we chose the right people and that the folks that are here, that they really enjoy what they're doing and they're all about it. You know, they're it's that same vision, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess along those lines, too, is how do you prepare for maybe the day when there aren't 1,000 people, you know, coming on a Saturday or 1,500 or however many there are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to think that we're doing certain things right so that we're not going to get to a situation where all of a sudden it's like, all right, the novelty's worn off overnight and it becomes a case of where is everybody, you know, and there's tumbleweeds blowing through the taproom. I don't think something like that would happen overnight. I could be wrong, but we're also looking at vitamin C as, say, as a brand in the sense that, I mean, I'm flooded with requests on a daily basis from other states to even, you know, worldwide, like, how do we get your beer and can we import your beer and come do this festival and come do that festival, come do this tap takeover. So we try to take advantage of a lot of those situations rather than just putting our beer everywhere locally, because we feel that that's only going to be sustainable for a certain amount of time until the next thing comes in, right? The next big thing.
We talk a lot about, you know, what you wish you'd known, you know, before you opened. What do you wish that you had known?
Boy, that's a good question. How much time do we have? I guess I wish I had known more about the build-out process. You know, we took possession on March 1 of 2018, and we didn't finally open our doors till February 9th, 2019. And here we are paying rent every month for pretty much a year, you know. It was a lot of money that went out that, you know, how long does it take to recoup that, right? So I wish we could have, as great as the town was and as great as the different departments were to deal with, I wish there would have been a way to streamline that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, live and learn, right?
And that's probably some advice that you'd probably pass on, too, to somebody who is, you know, just starting out.
Sure, absolutely. Like, you know, I have people all the time coming saying, oh, I want to open a brewery. And said, okay, well, the first thing you want to do is go sit down with the town, go sit down with the building department, planning board, whoever, and just say, this is what I'm thinking, you know, find out what they would like. If they're, you know, pro brewery or if they're not pro brewery. And if they are, okay, well, what's the building code say, you know? Like, build your building, your brewery to meet their specifications. So there's not a lot of back and forth. You know, that helped us. You know, we went to the building department with our architect as opposed to bringing a couple of lawyers in there. And it was, you know, okay, you tell us how you want us to build it. And then we took their specs and did it that way.
Doing it that way, is there still enough leeway for you to grow?
In what sense?
I guess building to their specs, you know, when they're telling you.
Sure. It's not like, you know, you want to build an apple and they tell you, well, no, you got to build an orange. It's more of a, you know, these are your requirements for parking or these are your requirements for electricity or for plumbing, you know, things of that nature. Stuff that we, you know, ultimately there's not that much variation in it from what you plan to, you know, what they want. But it makes that process easier.
Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about growth and knowing the right time to grow. And I think a great indicator for your own self right now is like you can't keep up, you know, like everything you're making, you're selling. But
yeah.
How do you determine what volume is sustainable? And I guess on top of that, how do you know when the right time is to make those capital investments?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess we look at it like, we don't want to set a number, you know, in the sky that we have to hit, like having our day jobs, if you will, having our real jobs that affords us the opportunity to kind of grow at our own pace here. We're not like struggling. We're not starving in the sense, you know, that we need to go and make as much beer and sell as much beer as possible because we need the money, right? Because we got to pay our rent or we got to pay, you know, our mortgages on our houses or whatever, you know, keep the lights on. We want to grow it organically. We found that, you know, we added that one tank and that helped with an increase. And now we're at the point where instead of releasing one can a Saturday, we'll be able to release two cans a Saturday and we'll see where that goes. And I think there's a certain amount of time too where there's, I don't know if it's called a gestation period, but there's a ramp up almost. So, you know, let's say we double our package product on any given week. Well, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of time for people to catch on to that and know that we have more product and then for them to get out here and buy it. And then, you know, so I don't know what the right number is. I know that we want to be successful and put out the best product that we can and still have quality of life, right? Because let's face it. I mean, we're only here for so long, right? And for what our families have had to deal with, I think we owe it to them.
I guess what does that look like in the interim, you know, where the business is sort of sustaining itself?
Well, we're at a point where we'll double our output without really increasing, I don't want to say anything, but we're, you know, we're still putting in the same amount of time, right? But instead of brewing a pilot batch, let's say, or what we would have normally brewed as a pilot batch on that second brew day of the week, now we're brewing a full production batch, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes just about the same amount of time. Yeah, our ingredient costs are more, but that's about it, right? Yet the output's much, much greater. And it gets more beer out there for people, and it gives them a you know, more people a chance to get it in their hands. We're at a point where we're starting to fluctuate a little bit, where if I'm here late one day, then maybe one of my partners is here late the next day. And we do a lot of trade-off of that. And then there's other times when we're all here. It's just a matter of what the business dictates, right? You know, again, not being too static.
Yeah. So I guess sort of wrapping up here, how are you going to view success? You know, what's going to define that for you in the end?
Boy, I don't know. I guess if I make it out alive on the other end, I don't know. I don't know.
That's a pretty admirable
goal.
Yeah,
well, think about it, right? It's. I guess if we can get this business to a point where we stay true to ourselves and don't, quote unquote, sell out, and we're able to create that legacy for our families and for the next generation, you know, there's so many kids that we've all got between myself and my partners, and always maintain that quality and always maintain the humility, which I think is tough sometimes as you get bigger, because whether you have it or not, I think from the outside, the assumption is as well, though they're, you know, they think that they're big time now, or they think this, or they think that. And I think in a lot of instances, it's not fair because you haven't changed at all. It's just, you know, everything around you has changed, but I don't know what success would be. I guess success would be maybe someday being able to unwind from our day jobs and having this be a full-time gig for us. I guess that would be good. And ultimately, being able to spend more time with our families.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a great way to end it. So thanks for taking the time, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate you coming in.
No, I appreciate you having me. So cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Thank you to our guest, Dino Funari. Thanks to our audio team. Thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us this week. The Brewbound podcast is available on pretty much every podcast platform imaginable. Drop us a line at podcast@brewbound.com and just let us know how you're doing out there. We hope you all are hanging in there. Stay safe, and we'll chat soon and hopefully have a beer in person when this thing passes. Later.